live from Pitch 25 for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees live at Pitch 25 in Edo. Great spot. Great spot to hang out. If you're in town for the NCAA championship, you got to get down here to hang out pregame. A good spot to watch the games later tonight. They have wall-to-wall TVs, so you're going to be able to watch the Astros and the national championship game. Pop a shot. I think that guy was going for the high score. Came desperately short. There's a Pong video game over there that I see in the distance.
There really?
There's a Golden Tee in the distance. Those are always fun.
That's a Rich Dick Willie favorite.
Pong?
Every time we do a remote, Bong? Dick Willie asks, do they have Golden Tee?
Oh, Golden Tee. Yeah. I thought you said Pong or Bong. No. Big Buck Hunter.
Well, Bong, yeah.
Big Buck Hunter is always a fan favorite. And they also have an indoor pitch, if you're really feeling a little saucy, to go out and show your skills.
Do they really let you just go out there and play, like, pickup soccer?
I don't know if it's – is it pickup
soccer? Have you seen soccer played here, Soccer Matters guy?
They do have – indoor soccer leagues that, like, reserve the pitch for certain times. And they'll play it here, yeah.
But I don't think if you're having a pop, you can just walk down there and have a little four-on-four pickup game.
Typically not, no.
I don't think you can.
Depending on how liquored up you are, that might be an insurance risk.
Yeah. Killer Bees will take AC since it's here with us against the Wheelhouse. So you got?
Oh, us in a heartbeat.
Yeah, especially because we're adding AC. AC, you were a striker back in your day?
More defender and defensive midfield.
Center mid?
Center mid. I ran a lot, so I was playing in the midfield
a
lot,
like
typically.
You look like a center mid.
Yeah.
You look like a center mid. Blankers looks like a center back.
I played center back. And
look at this. I have an eye for talent.
I played a lot
People
of goalie.
People think I'm joking whenever I say that, but I have an eye for talent. I just nailed it. I played a lot of goalie, too. I could see that because you got good hands, good lateral quickness. I could see that.
Where are you fitting in?
I'm probably center forward.
Okay.
At least in my heyday. Nowadays, I don't know. I'm just hoping to give you 5 minutes off of the from the dugout, you know? Mm-hmm. 5 minutes late, substitution, look to strike while
Iron's hot.
The iron's hot. Cody Castuccio, he has an idea for Nick Caserio. Using the number 12 pick in the NFL draft. I don't hate this a whole lot. It's not the worst thing Cody Castuccio has ever said. I don't love it for number 12. But here's Cody Castuccio, the idea he has for the number 12 pick.
If I was Nick Caserio, I'd call Washington, and I'd see if they do the 12th overall pick for Chase Young. Now, Chase Young has had some injury concerns, but when playing, dynamic, freak athlete, DeMeco Ryans coached some guys in San Francisco that had some trouble staying on the field, and then when they finally stayed on the field, they were monsters. Eric Armstead is one that comes to mind. So, to me, I'd call about Chase Young. That's your starting defensive end for the next two seasons. And, yes, you got to make a decision on that fifth-year option for him. It's an obvious yes. You give him that opportunity for the next two seasons to really just ball out for you. DeMeco coaches up a former elite talent. Washington,
He wants to trade number 12. For Chase Young, at least entertaining the idea of trading number 12 to Chase Young. What is your reaction when you hear Cody Castuccio with a brilliant idea?
I don't mind it. I don't mind it because I think Chase Young is an unbelievable talent. I think that he is one of the better at his position in the league, and the health is the only concern. And if you have 2 years to make an evaluation on whether you want to sign him long-term or not, and in the short term, you get a guy that was pretty disruptive until he got hurt, And you can make the assessment on how the knee is holding up and where he's at. I like it a lot. I just think that, to me, it seems like that's a little light on what it would take to get him.
Wow.
You know, I think that whether he was hurt or not, he was the number one overall selection in the draft, right?
Yeah. Was it one or two?
It was one or two, but I thought he went number one overall. But regardless, a top two pick, okay, second overall, I think that they might look for more than that. But if they're not, and that's all it takes, and you're either trying to get a guy that you're hoping is going to be a dominant player in the NFL at 12, or you're getting a guy that you know has been a dominant player that's still young, that you just have to worry about and evaluate the knee. And I'm sure that the medical staff of the Texans is going to do a lot of deep dives on it before they even okay the possibility of the trade.
They're also okay drafting dudes that have been hurt.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's usually not a deal breaker for Nick Caserio injury.
You get a guy that could be that disruptive and dominant, I'm all for it.
I like the player a lot, and I like the idea of trying to find a player that has an incredible amount of talent and then trying to buy him for a lesser amount. Number two pick, trading the number 12 pick here would be buying him for less, right? I feel like 12 is actually too much, and I say that by also not disagreeing that Washington will probably want more than 12.
More, yeah.
Like, I think Washington will probably want 12 plus sweeteners. I don't think there's any chance they'd be getting a top five pick for Chase Young, but I certainly think that they would think that they could get something in the middle of the first round plus sweeteners for Chase Young. The next time that Chase Young has 10 sacks in a season will be the first time that Chase Young has 10 sacks in a season. So does he have Jadeveon Clowney disease where he's just not capable of getting to double-digit sacks where he looks like Tarzan but doesn't quite play like Tarzan? I'm trying to be a little bit not sexist here by finishing off that cliche. But Clowney was a dude that could never get to double-figure sacks, and he was someone that was looked at to be like the next Lawrence Taylor, like this can't-miss defensive end. Chase Young, I'm not calling him Clowney, but Chase Young is looked at as this guy that's going to be an elite defensive end. He's going to have this outstanding career. And look, he had a good rookie year, won Defensive Rookie of the Year, had 7.5 sacks his rookie year. Then he had the injuries. Only played in 9 games in 2021. But and look, injuries happen, I get that. But here's my bigger fear. Of the 9 games he played in 2021, he had 1.5 sacks. Like, his sack total went completely away. He played in 3 games last year and did not have a sack at all. So Chase Young in the last 2 years has 1.5 sacks. And I know that he's missed a good chunk of games, but 1.5 sacks in 12 games is not a good ratio. So it's way too risky for me to trade the number 12 pick for a guy who can't get on the football field. And the times that he has been on the football field, he has less than 10 sacks in his career in 27 games. So I get the talent. I think the talent is great. There's just no way that I could use the number 12 pick that I think has way too much like importance for a guy who's really a project. Is it an elite project?
He?
Yes, he's 24.
Yeah, so he's still in the range. But I get, like, you can get a guy that, again, that I've been very, very key on is the fact that you want all the guys kind of developing at the same age range together. He's still on the outside. He's in the latter part of the window, but he's still in the window. Mm-hmm. But I understand it from that perspective because I think the Clowney is a good analogy because I think that on the downside of what he could be, I think it's more Clowney-esque. It's more of a guy that looks, with the window dressing, looks like the perfect example of what a defensive lineman should look like, a pass rushing lineman. He's big, he's physical, he's ripped, he's athletic. He can do a lot of things. But is it more of a deal where he was dealing with medical and health issues? Or was it more about the fact that he's one of these guys that can get lost in the shuffle? He looks athletic, he's strong, he's quick, but he doesn't have the true technique to get to the quarterback and be disruptive making the plays.
Yeah.
I feel like he's more than Clowney. I feel like he, especially with guys around him.
He hasn't had the level of production of Clowney
that
yet.
That surprised me that he didn't get to double digits before he got hurt.
And, I mean, that was only his rookie year. And, again, it was a really promising rookie year. But just Chase Young's career stats, and I know it's injury-riddled, but it's who he is. He is injury-riddled to this point of his career. He has 9 sacks and 27 games played. He's been injured for the better part of the last 2 years. So I understand the logic here, because would you rather have the talent of Chase Young or would you rather have the talent of Lucas Van Ness?
Right.
It seems like a slam dunk, obvious, no-brainer decision, but the guy can't stay on the field, and his sack totals aren't as good as you would think that it is. The second part of this is the financial part of this as well. Like, a huge part of the allure of drafting a rookie, especially with the number 12 pick of the NFL draft, is that you have him under club control for a very affordable rate for the next 5 seasons. Cody mentioned it a little bit in that soundbite, that you're going to pick up the fifth-year player option, so now he gets a pretty substantial raise in the fifth year, and now you're immediately in a situation after 2 seasons in which you're trying to decide how much you're going to be willing to pay Chase Young. So all of a sudden you have 2 years of this window of trying to get an idea of who Chase Young is going to be, and then if you want to lock up Chase Young. Secondly, if he's good, that means you're going to want to lock him up, but if he's good, now you're going to have to be paying him at this very elite defensive end rate, as opposed to having a rookie at number 12 that you have 5 years very, very cheap. And I think it fits the window a little bit better.
I understand it. And just to play devil's advocate, when you start talking about breaking all that stuff down, the one thing that you do run the risk to is when you're taking a kid fresh out of the draft is, again, he could look the part. He could look like he's a guy that's going to be a long-term solution. But early on, we've seen boom and bust. We've seen a lot of guys that look like a boom coming out and then turned out more and more to start showing you signs that they're leaning more towards being a bust. Uh-huh. At least with Chase Young, you do realize from the minute he hit the ground running in the NFL until he got hurt, he looked like a guy that could be disruptive.
Sure.
He looked like a guy that you have to respect enough to double team and really pay attention
but
to.
But is he RG3?
It's possible.
You know what I mean? Like, it might be the best year he ever has. It might be the only year he's ever healthy.
Yeah, I think that the way medical technology has advanced in terms of, you know, doing the ACLs and the knee surgeries and things like that.
Do you trust Lance McCullers?
The knee surgeries, I said. I did not say anything to do with whatever the hell he's got going on.
But some dudes are just naturally injury prone.
And I get that some people are injury prone. But, you do all the medicals, you go back to Ohio State, and you go back and look at everything that this kid has gone through to figure it out and find out, is it more of a thing where he just is constantly dinged up and something that you just don't want to take the risk on? Or you go back and look at a lot of film from his rookie year and go, this kid's really, really talented, and if he doesn't get hurt, he might have had, you know, a lot better numbers in season and could have done some more things. I don't know. I'd be willing to take the chance and explore it because I think he's – I believe he can be a dominant player in the league.
I like you to ask a tough question. 12 for Young?
I think I'd do it.
Okay. Joe?
I think my answer is no for Chase Young, but I don't hate the idea of moving the 12th pick for a different player. Like, when you talk about a pass rusher who has had very good production in the NFL, yes, he just went over 10 sacks for the first time this season, and he's a free agent after this year, so you have to pay him right away. But I look at a guy like Brian Burns from the Carolina Panthers. He had 12.5 sacks this year. He's had 9 sacks multiple times. He was almost traded instead of DJ Moore to the Bears. So the Panthers clearly look like they're willing to move on from him with where they're at in the rebuild. So I think he's a guy who, from day one in the NFL, has had consistent production. So if you're going to make a move, like, I think Brian Burns is a better fit personally than Chase Young. He doesn't have the injury concerns. You're basically on the same timeline. He's 25 years old. So I think I'm good with the idea of moving 12 for an elite pass rusher or someone that's going to get to the quarterback. I just don't know if Chase Young with his injury history is worth that risk, because then I think I'd rather just hope for Van Ness.
Yep, that's where I'm at too. Like, would you rather have Lucas Van Ness or Chase Young? I'd rather have Van Ness because of Young's injury concerns and the contract situation. I think Burns is a great name. Burns would be one that I'm very intrigued by. I don't know if the Panthers would trade him for number 12. Now, if you're starting, like, keeping the conversation to Young, I'd be interested in Young if it was, like, the second-round pick. But to your point, I just don't see Washington selling that low on a Chase Young.
Do you think that two guys, from the standpoint, though, is Chase Young a big enough name for fans to say, I like what they're doing, and in the meantime, too, it looks like a big-time move for this Texans team. It looks like they're taking a guy that was so highly regarded coming out of college and saying, this is a guy we can build around, and it gets more hype and excitement and fans fired up.
Oh, yeah.
Would it get you fired up if Chase Young is traded to the Texans for pick number 12? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line. Joe already mentioned one name. He mentioned Burns for Carolina. Are you opposed to the idea of trading 12 for an established player in the league? It will be some of those names that you're interested in. Do not say Pat Mahomes. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Pitch 25 on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. Live from Pitch 25, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Broadcasting live from Pitch 25 in Edo. A couple of some two-on-two cornhole going on right now. Actually, on the pitch, on the indoor pitch.
Oh, yeah? I told you it was there, yeah?
Three of the guys were awful. They were throwing up some bricks. One guy was really good. So it would have been like AC in the rest of the wheelhouse. There was also a dude right here playing Papa Shot. He was wearing a Kimball Walker jersey.
Okay, so he's been a long-time diehard.
I assure you he was not Kimball Walker. I assure you he was not. It was miss after miss after miss after miss. It was
a
sad
white guy
display,
too, by the way.
Yeah. Does that?
So I just I didn't think you should be that perplexed or confused about the fact that it wasn't Kemba Walker and you had to see him shoot first.
I don't see color blinkers. I just saw the jump shot.
Evidently
it was
not
Kemba Walker.
Yeah, but that would have been you the first hint that he's probably not Kemba Walker.
Well, knowing now that he was a white man, do you think he would have been more or less likely to make shots on the Papa Shot?
No comment on that.
Well, I mean, you went there.
I did because you said you had to see him shoot the Papa Shot to realize it wasn't Kemba Walker.
All I said was, I assure you, he is not Kemba Walker.
Well, he's back, though.
Maybe for a reason more than one. Well, watch
he
him
wants
shoot.
To
he's
prove
terrible.
You wrong.
He's bad. He's bad. He's not a good shooter. I got this guy with a cold beer way over you got, fake Kemba Walker.
You got the white jersey or the blue jersey, Jeremy? Because it's UConn on UConn crime right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, they're both going to miss a lot. I'll go the white jersey, not the white guy.
I'll take number 15.
You're going to go the – I paid Andrew Carlson a compliment. He wasn't even here to hear it. 713-780-ESPN. Are you opposed to the idea of trading the number 12 pick for an established player in the league? We're not talking some 30-year-old. I mean, Burns is a guy who's in his mid-20s. Chase Young's a guy who's not even into his mid-20s yet. Man, 24. He'll be into his mid-20s here coming up pretty soon. You mentioned that you said that, hey, I would do it for Chase Young. Joe mentioned Burns from Carolina as being a player that he would be interested in. 713-780-3776. I don't believe it's how you build a team, especially from a team that has been bad to becoming a winner. I don't think that you trade first-round draft picks for established players, even if they are in their mid-20s, as a way to rebuild you and take you out of this era, this period of suck for the Houston Texans.
Well, and you know what? It's a business. That's why I proposed the question to you. I posed the question to you guys before the break because I wanted to know if you thought that it was a big enough, impactful, sexy enough name from a marketing perspective to kind of be an eye-opener that fans could get even more hyped and excited about. And then again, you see return on the investment more than just on the field. But I get it because this is the kind of thing when you're talking about when we said stick to the plan and don't deviate from the plan. And the more that you can do that, the more you can have a good chance of sustaining long-term success once you get to a certain point. This would be deviating from the plan because now you're opening the checkbook and you're making a commitment to a guy that might be a little bit further down the road than the rest of the team that you're trying to put together and construct. And you're going to have some tough decisions, but you have much more time to evaluate who gets the money, who do we keep, who do we realize is not in our long-term plans after their first contract.
If you draft Bryce Young, though, do you have to worry about that?
In terms of marketability?
Right.
Probably not.
Like, if you draft Bryce Young and probably C.J. Stroud, I think Stroud would be a little bit less marketable than Bryce Young, but probably not. As soon as you draft them. Like, if the Texans do draft quarterback at number two, I don't think they have to worry about marketing and selling tickets.
And that's a fair point. I just mean that from an overall national perspective, oh, the Texans mean business. Oh, they're really doing something. They got a quarterback in the draft. They're committing to a big-time defensive player. They're looking to do the things to make sure that D'Amico Ryans has the weapons on both sides of the ball to make this team formidable. I think it would raise more eyebrows if you went with a veteran player, bringing him in that was a substantially high draft pick, and you also take a substantially high draft pick on a quarterback.
Yeah, like I understand where you're coming from, and I think like whoever drafting Chase or trading number 12 for Chase Young, if you just look at that as in a vacuum, Chase Young versus 12th pick of the draft. Chase Young's probably going to be a better football player right now today.
Yep.
Now there's more injury concern, and you have to all of a sudden have a huge financial burden quickly. Because he would be on the fifth-year player option in 2 years, and now you're having to sign him to an extension if you want to keep him. If you're not keeping him, then that trade was a loss because you're trading number 12 for 2 years of Chase Young, and it would probably be a bad year's 2 years of Chase Young because you don't want to re-sign him. And from a marketability point of view, again, in that vacuum, Chase Young's going to have more marketability and more name value than whoever you get at number 12, unless it's Jalen Carter, and it wouldn't be positive name value. So that is 100% right. Mine's more from the team-building point of view and building a winner at some point. I'm also not one to think that it has to be next year. In fact, I don't think it's going to be next year. I think you have to build through the draft in the NFL and Major League Baseball, NBA not as much. So you need to continue to build these young foundational pieces, Stingley, Petrie, whoever the quarterback is at number two, Damian Pierce, whoever the draft pick is at number 12. Maybe Nick Caserio can hit on some of the other draft picks in this year's draft as well, like he hit with Petrie in the second round. Like, I think he's going to hit with Christian Harris, who was drafted outside of the first round as well. So I believe fully that you have to build through the draft, and then once you're really a contender, that's when you make that type of trade.
Yeah, I just think, you know, one, to your point on the NBA, I think you still have to have drafted well or found some kind of transitional, transcending talent before or after in the draft in order to do what the NBA does. Because Daryl Morey proved to you the draft is insignificant, free agency is where it's at. Once you have at least two quality, you know, star-type players. But if you don't have those star players, I think it's basically the challenge is free agency normally, if you get them at that point, they're more bust than boom at that point in their career, and you have to at least use a draft or two to get at least one of those players and then bring the other one in.
Look, I talk about that all the time, the return on investment, getting the most value for the dollar, and you're right. Like, it is very difficult for a free agent to far surpass their dollar figure. Like, a lot of times you're just hoping they play up to their dollar figure, and most of the time it's not even for the duration of the entire contract. 8755, Chase Young is clowny, but with the injuries, has never stayed healthy, not a knock on him. He's just a Porsche with a check engine light on. maybe a little harsh on Chase Young. We mentioned some other names that you would be intrigued by. 4690, Texan should trade number 12 and move back a little bit, get later round picks, and then trade that first rounder for Jeffrey Simmons. So Jeffrey Simmons would be another player
from
in the
Tennessee.
Defensive line. I like his game.
He's good. He's disruptive.
Yeah. 2484 says, how would y'all feel about DK Metcalf? If the Texans trade the number 12 pick for a receiver like DK Metcalf, I would be upset. I wouldn't like that. I wouldn't like it at all.
He got an extension. He got big money last year. To make him feel better. Yeah, so I would say completely stay away from that, because now you're paying a receiver that's going to look for his quarterback to do the kind of things that he needs to prove that he's worth what they're paying him. And I don't necessarily know that in this first year that they're ready to do that. From a quarterback.
Right. 1592 due to injury history and concern. Second round pick in the Browns, third round pick for Chase Young. See, this is why I don't think it's a marriage. Because I don't think the Texans would spend the 12th pick for Chase Young for the finances that are about to come up because of the injury concerns, and because he's only had 9.5 sacks in a 3-year career because of injury concerns. And I don't think Washington would be willing to sell that low. Like I mentioned, the second round pick, I don't think Washington's taking a second round pick. It's either 12 or nothing. And I don't really think that the Houston Texans would be interested in that. 4683 brings up a good point. If you do trade the 12 for an established young impact player, you have to lock them up with an extension prior to the trade, not another Tunsil trade. It's a really good point. Tunsil kind of held the Texans over the barrel, so to speak, with the amount of money that they had to pay him. They had to make him, at the time, the highest-paid left tackle in football. Now, they probably were still going to make him the highest-paid left tackle in football even after the trade, so I don't know how big a difference it would have been, but it's much better if you just go ahead and sign that extension right when that trade is made.
Yeah, no question about it. I think that, you know, again, I want to be clear in the fact that when we look at Caserio, when we look at as you were talking about it, I think that we've seen a past history both with and without Caserio that throughout this organization, the things that they've tried to do and some of the things that didn't work out. The whole Jadeveon Clowney thing ended up to be the thing that either started or finished the relationship between Brian Gain and Bill O'Brien. And it ended out to be the beginning of the end for Bill O'Brien, because it proved and showed in terms of talent evaluation and money given out and the way he handled things from a general manager perspective, it wasn't close to whatever he could do positively as a head coach. And that's where, you know, Nick Caserio's got to step in right now and go, hey, much like we talked about with Dana Brown, there are going to be times when these are hypercritical times where you got to make a really gut check, tough decision. It might not be the popular decision, but it's the one that can be the difference between getting you off track or keeping you on track and maybe speeding up the process. And I think the more that you look at it, if it was just the number 12 pick, it's a discussion that at least we can have. When you got to add more than that, with all the holes on this roster, with all the holes to fill, and the way you're still trying to develop and get good talent in the building, I don't think you can afford to be giving up multiple serious picks for a guy that you have serious concerns about.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. You're okay trading 12 for a young, established player in the NFL. 713-780-3776. Also on the other side, John Granato. So he's been talking to people in the know, and the Houston Rockets know that they'll be going with a veteran, tough-minded, defensive-minded coach. Who did he mention? And is there a certain player the Rockets could be after in the offseason too? And it's not James Harden. Killer Bees live from Pitch 25 on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, right now I'm going to tell you about the good people at MyBookie, because we know what week this is. It's not just the Final Four tonight. More importantly, it is the greatest week of the year if you're a golf fan, and for a lot more people, it is the Masters. And when we're talking about golf's first major tournament, you want to make it more interesting? You can do it by following the Masters while betting on golfers at MyBookie.ag. There's nothing like cheering on your golfers during a major tournament with a wager on MyBookie. If you're not a big fan of golf, put a little wager on Scotty or Jordan or Rory, Scotty Scheffler that is, or Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, and enjoy golf more than ever before. All you got to do is go to MyBookie.ag, make that first deposit, use that promo code I always give you, BET975, claim an exclusive deposit bonus up to $1,000. At MyBookie, not only can you bet on this week's major golf tournament, but there's also, of course, Major League Baseball in full swing, NBA getting ready for playoffs, NHL hockey, soccer, XFL, a whole lot more. They even have live casino betting with real dealers. Blackjack anyone? This is where you can go. Be the master of your destiny this week by betting on the Masters in a whole new way and enjoy golf a whole lot more right now at mybookie.ag. Remember, get that welcome bonus with your initial deposit up to $1,000 by using the promo code BET975 and do what I always tell you. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it. It's mybookie.ag, promo code BET975.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Pitch 25. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees broadcasting live from Pitch 25. Blankers just watched walked by the cornhole. Were they still playing?
It's competitive. It's all UConn fans.
There was one dude in a Kimball Walker jersey.
Yeah, I think the other one's Rip Hamilton.
Yeah, it is a Rip Hamilton. I wonder who won. Did you ask him?
It was 5-4.
No, in the Papa shot.
Oh, the Papa shot. By the way, Kemba caught fire.
Did he?
Yeah, he was drilling everything in that
last
segment.
He went 3-for-10? Because 3-for-10 would be fire from what I saw.
He was knocking down a lot of them.
Okay. I mean, it's basically a glorified layup, if we're being honest. 713-780-3776. 1706, I think it makes more sense than trading if the Texans end up with C.J. Stroud drafting Jackson Smith and Jigba. I'm not going to waver off of what I've said. If the Texans are committed to going quarterback receiver in the first round, they better not draft that receiver at number 12. They better draft them at 18, 19, 20 and trade down a few spots, try to recoup a little bit of draft capital and take the receiver there. I do not want the Houston Texans taking a wide receiver at 12. Now, they take one at 21, cool. Not at 12.
No, and you and I have had a lot of discussions about this, and I've said from the get-go, you really swayed me into – looking at it from the perspective of how many are these guys are really potential wide receiver ones in this league, and then also how many of these guys are all bunched up with kind of the same, on the same tier with the same kind of skill sets. It makes you believe that there's going to be, it might be that if your eyes on only one guy, it might change your thinking a little bit. But if you know that with the way the draft seems to be trending to go, and you know that a lot of these receivers are going to slide down, it makes a whole hell of a lot of sense to try and get an extra pick or an extra sweetener here or there, trade down a bit, still get a receiver that you want, because I have been adamant that if you're going to take quarterback at 2, you should give him a weapon at 12. But if you're going to give that weapon at 18 and you also get an extra pick in the process, I'm totally good with that, because I also am realistic in things some we've discussed a lot, which is there's just far too many holes on this team to be passing up opportunities to be adding an extra top-notch picks that can get you better players than you currently have.
Two things with that. Would you hate if the receiver that you draft, the next receiver you draft would be at pick 33? Like, I'm not saying the next one, like 12
hate
and
it?
33. I'm
no.
saying, like, what if they just go a defensive end at 12 and then receiver at 33? Because I still think there's going to be – I don't think that the gap between first receiver and then the receiver taken at 33 is very different.
But, again, this is how you analyze how the draft goes. And you won't know this till draft night. But if guys start sliding and things start happening where a defensive end that you thought was going to be a guaranteed top 10 or 12 pick is starting to slide to 17, 18 – and you could still get a wide receiver with your second pick of the second round, or you might have to get creative again, and the pick you got for trading down, you could repurpose yet again to move into the late stages of the first round and get a third player, but it's one of the players you really wanted. It's a receiver that got bunched up and kind of lost in the shuffle as everything slid around during draft night.
Right.
Totally fine with all that, because you and Joe, and we're always overcrediting Joe, but Joe being the first one to, I guess, bring up the fact that if they went quarterback, then defensive player.
No, that was me.
That could trade back in,
Joe,
back into the first round to get a wide receiver.
Oh, yeah, that was him.
Yeah, see? Jeez.
That's my bad.
I don't know what's worse, though, the fact that you tried to take the credit from me or the fact that Joel is just so adamant about giving me none.
I just gave you all the credit.
But you had to whine about giving it to me.
Well, it's like pulling teeth on a daily basis when it's 2-on-1. But, I mean, yes, I gave you. I know where you always side. I just tried to give you credit, because the last time I brought that scenario up, I got told very firmly that that was Joe that brought it up first.
Well,
so I want to give you credit.
I'm fair, balanced, and just. You're right, though. Like, the board has to speak to you. Like, we can sit here and talk about 12 until we're blue in the face. You better see what the draft tells you after the 11 picks have been made. It's the Mike Tyson quote.
That's the misconception.
Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face.
And that's the misconception about all these mock drafts. Everybody, the trends tell you so-and-so is going to be gone by then. Oh, the trends tell you there's going to be a run on defensive ends. Well, guess what? The trends mean Zippo on draft night. because on draft night, everything changes in an instant. All it takes is one team to change what the mock drafts were thinking, and it might have been what they were thinking all along, to send the dominoes coming right down the line to where everything's blown up and what everybody mock drafting didn't see coming.
No, you're right. It's helpful and it's fun to play the situations, and GM should be ready for any situation. But you're right. That specific situation of how it all plays out on April 27th is the only one that matters. The second thing I was going to say is a lot of people are like, I get the sense that most people in this city that are Texans fans are like trying to build Rome in a day. Like, they're trying to build an all with this draft class. Oh, you got to get the quarterback, and then you have to get the receiver for that quarterback and pick number 12. But if you do that, you don't have defensive end. Like, it is impossible to turn this franchise that has won 11 games in the last 3 years combined, 3 wins this past season, into a Super Bowl contender next year. Like, you have to have the presence of mind and the patience to know that Nick Caserio is trying to build a winner, but it ain't all going to happen on April 27th through 29th.
But you know why it's all happening, right? Because now the Watson trade has finally been done, and you know what you got. Now you're going to conceivably get the quarterback that everybody's been talking about that you have to find, you know, after you move on from Deshaun Watson. And now the reality is there's not a whole lot sitting in that cupboard that's going to give you, you know, reason to say this is, we're going to wait till the next draft and this, that, and the other thing. Now it's the reality of, okay, we got the picks from Cleveland. We're getting a quarterback now. And now the expectation is this is where it all changes and turns over to being winning and progressive winning until you're winning at a consistent level to be one of the better teams in the NFL. And it just doesn't happen that quickly.
No, you got to be. You have to have the patience. You're not going to be able to find that receiver. I mean, you might, but if you do, you're ignoring another position. You might be able to find a defensive end at 12 and then ignore a receiver. It also could work out. What if you get Marvin Harrison Jr. in a year?
But that's what I'm saying.
You can't build it all in one day.
Just because you went through 2 years of embrace the suck and you did it correctly doesn't mean that there might be a year or two of embrace the yuck where it's not quite sucking, but it's not quite where you expect them to be in terms of winning consistently.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN. All right, John Granato said this last week, something that you've been saying for about a month. But he said he was talking to some people in the know within the Houston Rockets, and he thinks that the Rockets, he says, they will be going, basically, with a veteran, tough, defensive-minded coach. A couple of names that he mentioned were names that were on our wish list. Emi Udoka, Kenny Atkinson, Frank Vogel.
Yeah, look, I think Nick Nurse could be in that conversation as well because he's still trying to figure out what he wants to do after this season's over with the Raptors. So when you look at all those things and you start evaluating all of that, I have heard from my people in the know all the things that I've been echoing well before John said them, as well as people that said this could be potentially they're going to clear house. And that doesn't mean just the coaching staff. That could be upward. That could be more. That could be Tillman kind of reengaging and saying, whatever we've been doing to this point hasn't been working. So if we're lucky enough to get that number one or number two overall pick, that's something. But everything's got to change because the narrative across the country is this is a bleep show that is completely being run into the ground, and Tillman needs to reengage to stop it from happening. And I think that's encouraging if you're a Rockets fan, but it's also about getting the right personnel to fill those roles. We've said you need a guy the players can respect, that is not afraid to put his foot down and discipline the kids and starts getting them the kind of tutelage they need on a daily basis to become better players. It's exasperated by the fact that now if you get number one or number two, you're talking about very, very young kids added to the mix, but hyper-talented that are going to need guidance and coaching from day one.
I think the Rockets can kind of take a page from the Texans book a little bit here too. Is like, when the Texans season was done, they were terrible. Like, everybody was down on the Texans, season ticket sales, blah, 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 blah. No one was very happy. But the Texans have done a good job of creating buzz and momentum by hiring a coach that's well-respected around the NFL. Now, it certainly helps that he's a former player and a Houston Texan legend in D'Amico Ryans, but then also the hope of having a really good draft pick on top of that. So, like, the addition of D'Amico head coach and then everybody thinking the Texans are going to go quarterback, which I think they will, adds to this hope and this positivity for the Houston Texans. The Houston Rockets could look at that and be like, okay, like, we can create that hope as well. Because if you bring back Steven Silas, okay, well, no one's going to be excited. No one's going to be happy.
Matter of fact, a lot of people are going to be pissed off.
Right, yeah, it's the opposite. It would move the needle in the opposite direction. But if you move on from Steven Silas and you hire a head coach that's recognizable, that has had good success, okay, there's a step in the positive direction. And much like the Texans have the number two pick and many people thinking it's going to be a quarterback, the Houston Rockets are going to have a very good draft pick coming up as well. Now, a lot is riding on the lotto and how the ping pong balls go. But you add a new head coach, you add a star player, and then who knows what they do at the GM position. But I think the Houston Rockets could create that same positivity that the Texans did in the last few months.
And much like it started to turn when you saw them go to Lovie Smith, an experienced veteran head coach, it changed what the general manager could and couldn't do, get away with, and what he was trying to do with all the control that he had. And that's exactly what the Rockets need. They need someone that not only comes in with the credibility and the resume that impresses the team into listening and following, but it also resets the tone in terms of, this is not the general manager's show to interrupt my practices, to tell players what to work on, to tell coaches what they can and can't say to a player. This is a coach that says, been there, done that. You want to come with me? We can make this a team scenario where we're communicating all the time. But the last thing we're going to do is let you hire me, and then you come in and be like the puppeteer that pulls all the strings, and you expect me to follow your lead. Because if you're bringing me in to do a job, and with Ime Udoka, in specifics, this is a guy that doesn't come in with the positive clout of a D'Amico Ryans overall, and he's not an ex-Rocket.
Right.
But he does come in with the clout of saying, I just took a team to the finals.
Sure.
This isn't about basketball. So if I'm being hired to be a basketball coach, I can do this thing, and you know that you're hiring me for that, so get out of my way.
You can look at the parallel there, too, though. Like, I think Caserio lost power with the addition of D'Amico. Now, I think the GM position is going to either be gone or lose power with the addition of whoever this head coach is.
And it has to be, quite frankly.
So there's parallels and comparisons there as well.
Because whether you hear Brian Windhorst or all the different guys that are NBA reporters that are saying,
is Windhorst right?
Yeah, it's a bleep show internally.
I'm just saying he misreports things all the
time. Well, that too, but I'm saying it wasn't just Windhorst. There's a lot of people that have said that from a coaching perspective, no one wants to go there because it's running amok. To a lot of people that have said, if you get Scoot or you get Victor, the last thing you need him to do is get in a situation where it's a bleep show like it is in Houston.
Granato also mentioned another name, because you mentioned all the young players. The Rockets are going to have space to add something, whether it's free agency, whether it's via trade. What are some veteran names that you would like, maybe still young, maybe you could still turn into a star? The name that he brought up was intriguing. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, live from Pitch 25 in Edo.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. I've been telling you guys about him for quite a while, so is Johnny G. We could not be happier with what Doc Linville has been able to do. He does a whole lot of things, and he does them really, really well. He does Botox. He does Brotox. He does a lot of different plastic surgeries. But the thing that he is really, really, in my opinion, the best in the entire country at, that is the NeoGraft procedure. And if you're not familiar with it, it gets your hair back. If you have thinning or balding spots, particularly if you're losing your hairline or you've got a spot on top that just keeps getting bigger, you can prevent it from getting bigger. You can get your hair back again, and it's your own hair, not sprays and creams and foams that only mask the problem. The solution is, genetically, you're always going to have hair on the sides and the back of your head. They move some of that to where you need it most, mainly your hairline or that top back spot, and they take care of the problem once and for all. Because once the hair is in place, it's your own hair, it stays, it grows, it's with you for the long haul. And the thing that got me, 95%+ of the follicles move, stay, grow, and will be with you for the long haul, and that's what won me over. But if you want to just ask questions and see if it's right for you, and you don't want to pay anything out of pocket to do that, as an ESPN listener, you can. Just go to 975hair.com right now. Set up an appointment. It's absolutely free. No obligation, no charge. You go in, you ask all the questions, you get all the answers, from the financing to how long the process takes to how long it is until you see the actual full results. You will find out what I did. It is an amazing procedure, and more so than anything else, it works. And that's why I'm speaking for Doc Linville, because I went through it, I believe in it, and I've seen the results. Check him out today. Tell him I sent you by. It's 975hair.com.
Live from Pitch 25 for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees broadcasting live from Pitch 25 in Edo. Blankers Branham, 713-780-ESPN, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. Alex on our Twitch saying, which player would push back on a new coach with that tough an attitude?
Jalen Green, for one.
See, that's not the name that I jumped out to.
But the first one to me is Jabari Smith.
What?
Jabari Smith's going to push back to a coach that coaches him hard, because I know too much. And I've talked to people that have said that this is a kid, no matter the fact that his dad should have set him up because his dad played in the NBA, this kid's been really good at the AAU level, at the high school level, and then at the college level, to where what he's really used to is coaches that coddle and coaches that nurse him along and really kind of tell him how great he is. And the adjustment has been he does not like that. He does not like to be coached hard. He doesn't like tough love. This is the NBA, where you're playing amongst grown men, making a lot of money, and feelings don't matter to a lot of coaches or players. And you're going to have to get some thicker skin and tough it out, because this ain't AAU anymore, and this isn't one-and-done college. This is the pros, where it's put-up-or-shut-up time on a daily basis.
See, I think a lot of people look at the way Jabari plays, and he plays kind of, you know, tough. He plays harder than I think most of the players, at least has that reputation. So people would think that he'd be willing to be coached up, willing to, you know, take that tough criticism from a head coach. The first one that I look at is Kevin Porter Jr.
Oh, no doubt.
I don't think Kevin Porter Jr. would be capable of handling that.
Well, he doesn't like any kind of scrutiny, and we've seen it backfire when he, you know, John Lucas has had to deliver a tough message, and the next thing you know, he's completely, you know, pouting or going off the deep
AWOL?
End. Yeah, and
he's gone
in a certain
from the
case,
arena?
It's possible. Yeah, and I think you're right. But that's my point in general. There's just too many. If we're rattling off multiple names, what does that tell you? That the players have been running amok, doing whatever they want, being coddled into believing that if they don't like something, then we'll stop doing it because we don't want you upset. As opposed to a coach that comes in and goes, "Don't care," you know. Again, get some tissue and toughen up, Buttercup, because it ain't stopping if you don't stop the behavior. If you don't learn how to guard on defense and you don't learn how to switch, or you don't know how, the difference between when you're looking for help from the weak side and when you have to stay with your man in front of him, then I'm going to stay on you and I'm going to sit your butt down next to me when you don't do it, and I'm not going to lose any sleep if you're offended by that. And don't go running to the general manager to say that, you know, coachy isn't treating me right and I don't like it. Toughen up and understand this is the league.
You know, in an indirect way, kind of a roundabout way, we just said how challenging this job is for a head
no
coach
doubt.
That's going to be taking over, because there's a lot of those personalities that are kind of questionable whether or not they're going to be able to handle that tough love.
Yeah, and that's where you're, you know, to your second point, we're going to have to see the Rockets pay attention now, once the John Wall salary is off the books, to how that they can fortify this roster with some veterans. It doesn't have to be a star player, but it'd be nice to have at least one that could. But you're going to need some younger veteran players, too, that are going to be around. And I believe wholeheartedly that DJ Augustine's the kind of guy at the end of the season that, to fill a roster spot, they were going to do it with a guy that knows right from wrong in this league and has been through enough to understand, hey, for the rest of the season, I'm going to try and tell these kids again what's acceptable in this league and what's not. Because going back to what John Wall said and what he tried to tell KPJ and Green specifically, the stuff you're pulling and getting away with here is not going to be accepted or tolerated anywhere else in this league.
Yep.
That's something that has to change if you're going to get the right coach, and it has to change if you're going to get the right player.
See, a lot of people look at John Wall and don't think he's credible because of the way he left, probably because of his lack of production. But
yep.
I don't think anything he said is like a mistruth. Like, it's
correct.
It's a fact what happened. How about the name that Granato mentioned that the Rockets could kick the tires on in the offseason? Jaylen Brown of Boston. He says doesn't really like Boston, wants to go play somewhere else. Not necessarily that he needs to have his own team, but that's a nice, like, coincidental thing as well. He just mentioned he doesn't like Boston, doesn't like the city of Boston. Somebody who's averaged 20 points a game or more in four straight seasons. This year he's averaging nearly 27 a game, can rebound a little bit, can pass a little bit. Not a great three-point shooter, but good. How would you feel if the Rockets look to acquire Jaylen Brown as that veteran piece?
So I would love it, but I would love it more if you just got him in free agency, and Boston's not going to let that happen. I think Boston's going to look at it as trying to make a trade first. They can't just let Jaylen Brown walk out the door for nothing.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest problem, because I think Jaylen Brown still hasn't reached his full potential. I think that there's still a higher ceiling for Jaylen Brown, and he's limited his game so that Jason Tatum can take off. And those two guys are both great players, but there's nothing that doesn't indicate that Jaylen Brown in a different situation could be just like Jason Tatum, and that's why I think everyone should be interested in a guy like Jaylen Brown. It would depend on what you have to give up if you're trying to make a move for him, because I also don't want to mortgage the future to get my centerpiece, but I totally believe that's the kind of guy that has another level he can still get to once he gets the money and gets out of Boston.
I've seen some people kind of reference that next level to being similar to James Harden when he left Oklahoma City to Houston. I don't know if I would go that far. I mean, James Harden became an MVP.
Yeah.
I don't know if Jaylen Brown has MVP potential, but I think he's a really good player. Certainly would be interested in Jaylen Brown, depending on the price. I don't want to mortgage the future either. Like, I'm not trading Jaylen Green and Jabari Smith for Jaylen Brown.
No.
I'm not doing anything crazy like that. But I would certainly be interested, certainly be intrigued, And even though I'm trading for my current roster to acquire Jaylen Brown and then pay him probably a maximum deal, I'd rather go that route, even though it's costing me players on my team or draft capital, than signing James Harden. And I'm a little bit more open to the James Harden thing than you are.
Right.
But much, much more intrigued by Jaylen Brown than a James Harden.
Because his age and everything and the potential upside still fits. I think Harden's clearly on the downside. No matter what you expect or think he has done and still can do, I think he's clearly on the downside. I think we talked – I just got done saying I think that Jaylen Brown has another level he can get to, maybe more. So I think that – and he's also still young enough that he can blend with the guys you have. But I at what price? And who is going to be involved in the trade? Because I think that we've talked about untouchables in the past. I think probably from a trade perspective, the three guys that you don't touch are going to be Jaylen and Şengün and Jabari. And other than that, everybody's on the table.
I wonder if they'd be intrigued to I wonder if Şengün's untouchable, though. Because I wonder if they view Şengün's defense as like just such a liability that they're willing to make an unpopular move by unloading Şengün. That way they never have to worry about, okay, we don't have to worry about his defensive liability anymore.
Well, and I think that look, Brook Lopez, when he came into the league, was a defensive liability. Mm-hmm. And Brook Lopez was a scorer. And Brook Lopez continues to score. Brook Lopez is going to be the defensive player of the year this year in the NBA. So I think that you also realize of all the skills that you don't have that you need to work on, shooting and some of the offensive moves and things like that, the easiest thing to get a player that you can get to buy, it's the buy-in and the desire to play defense. If you learn and intelligently know how to switch and you know how to rotate and you know how to hold your position in the post without fouling, you can be an adequate defender in this league, and you can get better at it.
I don't love Şengün's quickness, though.
And I don't disagree with you, but it depends on the players around him, too. If you have a lot of guys with long reaches and wingspans and athleticism, he can fit right in because other guys can pick up what he's lacking in terms of his deficiencies defensively. But you gain so much from his footwork, his passing, and his ability from either the high post or on the block to be able to do things to where I think that there's still too much left there to want to give up on him. If you see the teams that are lining up that said they'd love to have him, I think that tells you enough that you don't want to let go of him just this soon.
I mean, offensively, he's fun to watch. Offensively, it's one half of the floor. I mean, it's great. Other half of the floor, it's
I hear you. But I think you can improve that. But,
you can certainly improve. Now, what's his ceiling, though? See, I agree with you that the improvement is there, obviously. I think scheme matters a whole lot, too, and a good defensive-minded coach could change things a lot. But is Şengün ever going to be a dude that has elite lateral quickness?
Probably not.
I don't think so. Is he ever going to be a dude that has great jumping ability? I think it's a little underrated, but he's not going to be, he's not going to have a 48-inch vertical.
But at the same time, when you see where he's lacking right now, it's a lot of just the game coming to him.
I feel like he's a little slow.
He's a little slow, but I think that he also is a little bit deer in the headlights and doesn't understand where I need to be if one of my guys gets beat off the dribble at the top of the key. When is it right to leave the guy in the corner for the three and shut down the middle as opposed to sticking and staying to make sure that guy can recover and someone else can help?
A lot of quick, confident decision-making.
A lot of thinking decisions. Yep.
Can make you look a little faster on the floor, even if you aren't necessarily improving with that foot speed. But Jaylen Brown would be intriguing. Of those young players that you mentioned, because you mentioned three, Jabari Smith, Jaylen Green, Alpi Şengün, of the ones that are the most untouchable, how would you rank them?
I still think that you have to put Jaylen Green's just all-around game and ability and the potential as number one. And then I think you put Jabari 2 and you put Şengün 3. And I think that Jabari's just too young. I don't think that from what we've seen so far, he's shown more than Şengün. But I think his ceiling is higher than it is for Şengün. And so for those reasons, I'd probably put Şengün 3rd.
Here's I would go Şengün 3rd. I would have Jaylen 1 still probably. Jabari's a close 2nd. I think the difference between 1 and 2 is closer than the difference between 2 or 3 for me. Jaylen, close 2nd. Jabari, distant 3rd for me is Alpi. And then the lotto pick might be higher than any of those, depending
Very
on where
true.
You end up. 1706, don't dismiss this one. Not Danny, but Bobby Hurley from Arizona State. Hire him as your head coach. That would be an awful hire.
No, absolutely.
Team.
No chance that you get a guy that can command the locker room or get what he needs from his general manager and to stay out of his business.
713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Pitch 25 in Edo. Great spot to ditch work. Head over here, have a drink before the championship game. If you're looking for a place to watch the championship game, well, this is the spot. Wall-to-wall TVs, too, so you won't miss out on your Astro baseball as they open up a series tonight against the Fighting A.J. Hinches and the Detroit Tigers. It is Championship Monday. UConn-San Diego State coming up tonight, late tonight. But it is also the championship game of the Bad Take Boulevard bracket. We're down to our final four. We play down from 4-1 on the Bad Take Boulevard bracket final next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.